An excerpt from Red Diaper Baby, written and performed by Josh Kornbluth. My father, Paul Kornbluth, was a communist. He believed there was going to be a violent communist revolution in this country, and that I was going to lead it. Just so you get a sense of the pressure. But anything my father told me, I believe, because my dad was such a physically magnificent man. He was big, and he had a great big pot belly. Not a wiggly, jiggly, social democratic pot belly, a firm communist pot belly. You'd bop it, it would bop you back. It was strong. And he had powerful legs from running track at the City College of New York, and beefy arms. And he was naked, virtually all the time, naked in the apartment. And all over his body, he had patches of talcum powder. You know Johnson's baby powder? I guess because he was a big man and he would chafe, especially around his private parts. And my dad had me on the weekends, and I would have loved to have slept in late on the weekends, but my father wouldn't let me. He'd wake me up. And this is how he'd wake me up. He'd come bursting into my room and stop in the doorway. When he did this, the talcum powder would come bouncing up off of his balls. It was like the entrance of a great magician. And then he'd come running up to my bed and looming over me, he'd sing, "Arise, ye prisoner of starvation. Arise, ye wretched of the earth." I didn't know that was the Internationale. I didn't know that was the International Communist Anthem. I thought it was my own personal wake-up song. Oh, check it out. "Arise, ye prisoner of starvation. It's time for breakfast. Arise, ye wretched of the earth. It's 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm being woken up." Now, if I didn't show the proper signs of life right away, my dad would lean down over me, and his long graying hair would straggle down, his beard would flutter down into my nose, and he'd go, "Wake up, little fucker! Wake up, little fucker!" That was his nickname for me, Little Fucker. Nothing at all pejorative about it. For my dad, calling me Little Fucker was like calling me Junior, beloved little one, Little Fucker. From a very early age, I realized that one day I must grow up and become a big fucker. And I assumed that this would happen around the same time that I led the revolution, that those two events would go hand in hand, because Dad had told me over and over that all the great revolutionaries were also great fuckers. But for now, I'm lying in my bed, my dad looming over me, his, to me, enormous penis swinging around, spewing smoke powder, whatever. And at the time, I just had a little six-year-old... Well, I guess you could call it a training penis, if you will. Little fucker. I didn't realize at the time that my father had his own language. Not only his own English, but also his own Yiddish, which I used to think was real Yiddish, but then my mom would go, "That's not Yiddish. What your father speaks is not Yiddish. I went to Yiddish school in Bensonhurst. What your father speaks is not Yiddish." I'd say, "What, you mean Auska?" No, there's no Auska in real Yiddish. There's Oiska, but not Auska. Well, in my father's Yiddish, there was a term, Auska. Auska was a prefix meaning a lot of, very, as in, "I am Auska cold, my son," meaning I am very cold. I'd say, "Well, of course you're Auska cold, Dad. You're Auska naked. The window is Auska open." As it would be in the kitchen, where we go for breakfast, me and Dad would sit around the kitchen table having hard-boiled eggs, my father not really a soft-boiled kind of guy. And never little eggs. Whenever Dad went shopping at the bodega for eggs, he always got Auska jumbo large size, so we would not want for eggs. And we would smear on our eggs, in my father's language, salad dressing, meaning mayonnaise. And we'd have juice, apple juice, orange juice. And Dad would regale me with his stories of organizing in the South with the Henry Wallace campaign. That's Henry Wallace, okay? Henry, not George Henry. And he would drill me over and over in the catechisms of our faith, of communism. Like how society has been driven from one stage to the next, driven inexorably by the forces of dialectical materialism until, you know, I sense I'm covering old ground for a lot of you. So just to review, according to Marx and Engels, and my dad, the first human society was primitive communalism. In primitive communalism, everyone's sort of dancing around, kind of like at a Grateful Dead concert. Then the next stage after primitive communalism was slavery, which must have been a bummer of a transition. Then from slavery to feudalism, then after feudalism, well, we've learned now through history, it's very important after feudalism to stop in capitalism before moving on to socialism. It's very important to stop in capitalism because that's where you get your appliances. So you stop in capitalism, you get your stuff, And then you move on to socialism, and finally to communism, and you're back at the concert. Then after breakfast, me and Dad would move from the kitchen into the living room. Although when I say kitchen and living room, I'm just being euphemistic. There was just one basic room, except for my bedroom. Dad always insisted I have my own room for my privacy. He'd just come bursting in at any moment. But aside from my bedroom, there was one basic room. That's because when my dad moved into an apartment, the first thing he would do is he'd knock down all the walls. I'm not speaking metaphorically. I mean, he would knock down all the walls. The first time he did this, we had to move right away. Because, well, you see, we lived on the first floor, and the entire building came ouska down. So we moved to the next building, same landlord who lectured my dad on the crucial architectural concept of the supporting wall. That's the wall you must not knock down. So Dad would go knocking around with his hammer. He'd find the one wall that wasn't hollow, leave that wall up, knock down all the other walls. And all along the external walls of our kitchen, come living room, come dining room, come bathroom area, there were posters. Posters of our heroes, our gods. W.B. Du Bois, Malcolm X, Dr. King, Ho Chi Minh, Bertolt Brecht, Emma Goldman. Then at the end of all these posters, my height chart. See how the little fucker measures up. And then we go outside for our walk. And when we went outside, my dad, in his one true concession to society, he'd put on clothing. This is back in 65 when I was about 6. Dad wore this one-piece bright orange jumpsuit. You know, a parachute outfit with a broad collar and a zipper with a peace symbol pull thing that would seal in the freshness of the powder. And we go off on our walks. And being good communists, we had songs associated with every activity. But we didn't just have generic walking songs. No, we had specific going up the hill songs, specific going down the hill songs. We learned our biggest going up the hill song off an album by Paul Robeson, a great Jewish folk singer. We learned it off a record that Dad had borrowed from the public library and then, as a revolutionary act, refused to return. And my mom's a librarian, so you can kind of put it together. Okay. Going up the hills, me and my dad would sing.
Oh, Volga.
It's very hard to walk fast while singing Eyuch Nyem, the Volga boat song. A lot easier on our main Going Down the Hill song, which we learned off an album by Doc Watson, a great Jewish folk singer from the Appalachians. We learned it off another record that Dad had liberated from the library. Going down the hills, me and my dad would sing,
as I go down in the valley to pray,
said as we went down in the valley to pray on East 7th Street between C and D in Manhattan.
As I go down in the valley to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way.
My father couldn't hear me. He thought I wasn't singing. He never connected it with the fact that he was singing so ouska loudly he was drowning me out. So periodically, Dad would stop on the sidewalk and turn to me and go, sing louder, my son, I can't hear you.
Oh, fathers, let's go down, come on down. Come on, fathers, let's go down in the valley to pray.
Try singing even louder, my son, and perhaps with more melodic invention.
Come on, fathers, let's go down in the valley to pray, to pray.
And a child shall lead them. And we'd continue north on our walks towards Herald Square, and we'd hit the flatlands of Manhattan. And along the flatlands, we would sing what for us were flat songs, rounds, which I like better. They're more even between the two singers. And along the flatlands, we would stop at the bodega to get supplies. We'd stop at the pharmacy to get Dad's pills. Then we'd continue north along the flatlands, singing rounds like, come, follow me. Whither shall I follow? Whither shall I follow thee? To the greenwood, greenwood tree. It's a nice, cheerful walking song, although confusing lyrically to an urban child. Follow thee to the greenwood tree? Why? I'd much rather follow thee to, say, chock full of nuts, which is the kind of place we had to eat at, me and my dad, because we had to live ouska cheaply. Because my father, Well, he was a school teacher, and he's a wonderful school teacher. But the thing is, okay, my dad, he would get a job, okay? He'd be teaching at the school and be developing this great love and passion for his students. But at the same time, Dad would be developing this anger at his bosses, the principal, the assistant principals, the school board. And this anger at his bosses would build and build till my father finally couldn't take it anymore. This would take about 2 weeks. And at the end of those 2 weeks, Dad would go storming into the principal's office and go, "Fuck you!" Often the guy would never have seen my dad before. And he'd go, "If you work for me, you're fired." So Dad would get another job. He'd be teaching at his new school, at a new school with great love and passion, but developing this anger at his new bosses. At the end of a couple weeks of his new job, Dad would go storming into the new principal's office and go, "Fuck you!" So then Dad would get another job, perhaps a little further away from New York, as Dad lost his license to teach in this gradually growing radius away from Manhattan. And at each new job, after a couple of weeks, "Fuck you, you're fired, another job. Fuck you, you're fired, another job. Fuck you, you're fired, fuck you, you're fired." This went on for years and years. My father never saw the pattern. He never saw the cause and effect between "fuck you" and "you're fired." So we had to live Ouska cheaply. But that was fine with me. I loved eating at Ouska cheap places like Chock Full of Nuts. You could get a nice hot dog, maybe some coconut cake. And then we continue north for further Ouska cheap adventures. Like we go to the Museum of Natural History, which at the time, admission there was whatever you would care to donate. I think they've since changed that policy, I think because of my dad. "Pay them a penny and not a penny more, fucker." "You're right, Dad. We're not going to give in to those imperialistic paleontologists." And then we go up to the dinosaur room where my dad would give me a tour. I don't think he was an expert in the field, but he did have his bright orange tour guide outfit. "The Tyrannosaurus Rex, my son. One of the largest reptilian fuckers ever to walk the earth." And other little kids would break off from their field trips and join us. The field was a lot more interesting the way my dad described it. Then at the end of a weekend of this kind of Ouska fun, my dad, as the courts had mandated, had to return me to my mom.